It's been called the American religion, which is just what Joseph Smith hoped for when he founded the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. Hello, on the Ark today, the unusual tale of Joseph Smith, whose birthday was celebrated on the 23rd of December. Perhaps it was because he was born so close to Christmas that the young Joseph Smith claimed a prophetic role for himself in upstate New York, where spiritualists, transcendentalists, and competing Protestant sects vied for a place in the sun. Professor Douglas Davies from the University of Durham is writing Smith's biography.
A very important part of Joseph Smith's teenage life took place when there were religious revivals going on in what came to be called the Burnt Over District. Burnt Over because the fire of the Holy Spirit had raged, as it were, through it. And Joseph himself tells us that he was interested in the Methodist cause and attended services when he could, but never actually joined.
I guess that sort of environment could lead to a fair degree of confusion about where to go.
That was the key question in the boy Joseph's mind, which to join. I think that the confusion, the war of words, he talks about this kind of a war of words and of ideas and doctrines that he found in the revivalist campaigns around him. And that's a prime mover in the boy Joseph's life, really. And that, of course, is what lay behind his desire to ask God which one was the right one.
And he managed to get some answers, too. He experienced a few revelations. What was the first one?
Well, he did. The first vision is a very important part of Joseph's life, as he tells us about it later, and a very important part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints' understanding of the lad, when he goes into a grove of trees and he asks which one is the right one, and God tells him essentially that none of them is correct, and that he should wait until such time as God would show him the way to go. And then in this vision he has a tremendous sense of evil. And then he says that above him he sees a pillar of light descend. And he says the two personages were in that pillar of light, God the Father and God the Son. And they appear very like each other. In fact, he can hardly tell the difference between them, except that the one says of the other, "This is my beloved Son, hear him." So for Joseph that was a key issue, that now he was in contact with God, or perhaps rather that God was in contact with him, and the future would be made clear in due course.
Well, at the age of 17, he has another revelation in Palmyra, New York, in 1823, when a spirit named Moroni appears to him. Now, has that name Moroni ever appeared before?
Not as far as I'm aware. Numerous names appear in the Book of Mormon and in early Mormon documents which don't appear elsewhere.
Well, it's Moroni who directs him to the buried treasure, the golden tablets on which were inscribed the Book of Mormon. Now, it would probably surprise some people that the Book of Mormon is supposed to be a story of the ancestors of the American Indians. Can you tell us how he relates that story to Jesus Christ?
Yes, it's a long story, and it's a story that begins in the Middle East, in the Holy Land, 500 or 600 years before Christ, when people leave, migrate from there, and land up in the New World, what we would later call America. And those people set up civilizations, and they warred with each other. And in these various battles that go on, God reveals himself over time, until there's a final battle when they kill each other off, really. But records have been kept. And those records were, according to this account, were written on metal plates and hidden away for some future date when they would be disclosed again through Moroni to the boy Joseph Smith. He then has this ability to translate them, as he puts it, and that then becomes the Book of Mormon. So that's related to Jesus Christ because there is an account in the Book of Mormon, there is an account of Jesus appearing, not just in Jerusalem to his disciples after his resurrection, but he appears to his followers or to these people in the Americas.
Well, at that time in the 1820s, there certainly was a great deal of interest in the lost tribes of Israel and where they went to. And some people had written books about it then, associating the Indians, the American Indians, with them. Do you think Joseph Smith was influenced by those accounts?
It's really very difficult to know exactly what this teenage boy, who was relatively illiterate, certainly uneducated, would know in terms of general cultural ideas. There are theories for and against. One can look at it another way, which is that to someone very familiar with the Old Testament and to the tribes spoken of in the Old Testament, it's very easy to think of God's people in terms of tribes. And I think really that's what Joseph was doing.
But it wasn't really a church, it seems to me, that Joseph Smith was founding. It was more like a kingdom, you know, with a temple, with its own laws that included polygamy and its own militia. Did he have a vision that was more like a new kingdom as opposed to simply another church on the American scene?
It was certainly going to be more than a church, because Joseph believed that Christ was coming again, as others in his day did, of course, and that he was preparing for that coming, as others did. But events overtook him. Shortly before he was killed in 1844, he was preaching a famous sermon at a funeral, and in it he used the phrase, "No man knows my history." I think that in that phrase, "no man knows my history," Joseph is reflecting upon the events that overtook him as he saw it. So that it wasn't that he, as it were, sat back and planned in advance what was going to happen, as one might plan a business venture. But he was caught up in things which took place. And what did take place? Well, yes, he founded a church, the Church of Christ, in 1830, became the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of course it did. And he published the Book of Mormon too in 1830. Members gathered around him, followers came, he sent missionaries abroad to Europe, to England, Scotland and Wales, to Scandinavia, and they started pouring in. So by the 1840s, 50s, you've got many migrants coming. So in a sense, he now has to cope with those as well. But at the same time, he's finding political opposition.
Is that why he put himself up as a candidate for the American presidency?
Yes, I think Joseph saw religion as not a fragmentary part of life, but as something that dealt with the whole of life. In that sense, what Joseph was doing then was what we see in some ways in parts of the Islamic world today, that religion is not differentiated, as the sociologists would say, from other parts of life, but is part of the whole scheme of things. So that when people talk about a theocracy, a rule by God, I think that's in line with what Joseph was thinking, that the whole of society, all aspects of life, had to be under the divine commandment and the divine organisation. And that, of course, included politics, political organisation. So it made sense to be politically involved as a leader, as, of course, he was within the narrow Mormon community.
Well, it's no surprise then that he elicited such opposition from people not only outside of the movement, but also inside. I think some of the people who migrated from England were a bit surprised at the extent to which the Mormon beliefs differed from Protestant Christianity.
Yes, I think a major aspect of the appeal of Mormonism in the 1840s and 50s, let us say, lay in the fact that Jesus was coming again, but coming to America. And to go there to prepare a place for him was part of the religious call. But, and of course there were some very important buts, when they arrived into a religious community which had at its heart a prophet and ongoing revelation, then when some issues emerged, such as, for example, spiritual marriage, polygamy, this was a bit of a shock to some people, and it took a lot of religious persuading for them to agree to practice in this way. And similar things emerge with other aspects of Mormon ritual in relation to the afterlife. So there were challenges there. And in a sense, this brought about a consolidation within Mormonism of those who would stick with it, just as some left because they couldn't put up with that
Well, eventually Joseph Smith met his end in a violent way, as did his brother. Can you tell us about the circumstances of his assassination?
Yes, there was strong political opposition at, because Mormons were growing in number, growing in influence. This was a very complex story, actually, and it was tied up with a local newspaper and what it had been saying, and Joseph wasn't very happy with that particular attitude of the press. And there was an event in which the press was broken up. This bred a local debate about the freedom of the press. And to cut a long story short, Joseph was imprisoned. And while he was imprisoned, awaiting proper legal procedures, a lynch mob effectively came, stormed the jail, and shot him. So in one sense, he was murdered. But that very murder provided an opportunity for Latter-day Saints to see the death in a different way, namely as a martyrdom. And in one sense, this was a crucial turning point in the history of Mormonism, in my opinion at least, because here is a man who is now taken away from them while the whole community is still in process of development. And he becomes a kind of an ideal leader who has now been taken from them. And there was a competition for leadership. And one person who had been Joseph's right-hand man, someone called Sidney Rigdon, vied for leadership, reckoned that God was calling him to be the prophet. But there was another man, one of the great men in the history of Mormonism, Brigham Young. There's a very famous moment in Mormon history. It's called the Day of the Prophet's Mantle. And it's one of these events in which history and myth merge with each other. And the story goes that Sidney was up in an open-air preaching area, telling the good saints that he would now lead them on after Brother Joseph had been taken from them. And whilst he is engaged in this great speech, Brigham, who's been off elsewhere doing missionary work, returns and mounts a wagon behind the congregation, as it were, and they hear him speak. They turn around. Who do they see? Whose voice do they hear? They saw the form of Joseph. They heard the voice of Joseph. But of course it was Brigham.
So he's the re-embodiment of Joseph Smith.
He is the re-embodiment of Joseph Smith. And yet a more different kind of embodiment of Joseph you could hardly imagine. Because there is Joseph, a strongly charismatic, attractive man, an idealist. And in a sense there's Brigham, who's a pragmatist, very down-to-earth kind of guy. But he was just the kind of man, I think, who needed to pick up the reins and take people westwards, finally, of course, into the Utah Valley. He is the famous one who stands there above the valley and says, "This is the place." And then for the next half century, practically, he leads them and gives them a period of consolidation. So it's an interesting passing on of the prophet's mantle, but in a different kind of keynote.
Today one often hears Mormons talk about their faith as possibly a world religion, but it's also been described by Harold Bloom, no less, as the American religion. Is there any likelihood that Mormonism, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, can really be a world religion?
My view of it is that in order to be a world religion, I think that one needs a tremendous degree of enculturation, of a religion becoming very much part and parcel of its society. And along with that, very often you get strong differences of opinion, divisions, fragmentations, local developments of a religion. Certainly I can't foresee a time in which Mormon church life will become that kind of fragmented, encultured religion. So in a sense, world religion in terms of numbers, yes. World religion in terms of the complexity of what a Buddhism or an Islam is, no.
Professor Douglas Davis of Durham University in the UK was brought to Australia by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for a conference on Joseph Smith. Tune in again next week for The Ark with me, Rachel Kahn.